The following program is being brought to you on the Voice America Empowerment Channel. For more information about our network and to check out additional show hosts and topics of interest, please visit voiceamericaempowerment.com. The Voice America Talk Radio Network is the worldwide leader in live internet talk radio. Visit voiceamerica.com. The views and ideas expressed on the following program are strictly those of the host or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and ideas held by the Voice America Talk Radio Network, its staff, and management.
The following program may contain detailed testimonials of domestic violence, childhood sexual abuse, rape, and/or psychological abuse. If you experience a trigger while listening to this broadcast, please visit the links on our host page for helpful resources. If you or somebody you know has experienced domestic violence or psychological or sexual abuse, the next hour could be the most important one this week. This is Abuse Survival Stories presents I Reclaim My Voice with your hosts, Reese Zigazaga and Denise Watkus. Our program features survivors that share their stories of abuse and the healing journey. Join us as we work toward ending the silence on which abuse thrives. Now, here are your hosts.
I turn to an empty page and I weep. I weep for what has not been said. I mourn for a caged voice laying dead, longing for freedom, but somewhere between cradles and caskets.
Hello and welcome to Abuse Survival Stories presents I Reclaim My Voice. I'm your host, Reese Zigazaga.
And I'm your co-host, Denise.
The clip you just heard was from a poem called Unleash by Dwayne Hall, who is an amazing poet and a great supporter of the Abuse Survival Stories movement. As always, we'll be ending the show today with the full poem, so make sure you stay tuned for that. One thing that we continue to emphasize is that the work that we do with Abuse Survival Stories is for both women and men who have experienced various forms of abuse. When the discussion of abuse comes up in general, the focus tends to be on women, and it's not uncommon for the voices of male survivors to go unheard. So we are very passionate about continuing to provide a space for men to share their stories. But because of social stigmas and other factors, men are less likely to come forward to open up and speak about what they've been through. And so we are very grateful to have Michael Marks on the show with us today.
Michael Marks is a survivor of childhood sexual abuse and an advocate for ending the silence that surrounds abuse in the Black community. Michael is a professional speaker, youth worker, and has run many recreational programs throughout the Greater Toronto Area. His experience with children and youth for the past 15 years has helped him hone his message of healing and support to one that has helped many men step forward and seek help with their past. Michael, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you. So let's first talk about the abuse you experienced. Who was the perpetrator?
Well, like many survivors, there was more than one perpetrator. In my case, it was three throughout the course of my childhood, from the age of starting about 5 years old, straight up until about 10 years old.
Wow, and can you tell us a bit about what happened, including whether or not there was, you know, a grooming period?
Yes, there definitely was a grooming period. The first perpetrator was my babysitter. The grooming was more along the lines of how she would get me ready for school, so she had access to, you know, taking off my clothes, getting me dressed, Then one day she just asked, you know, would I like to have sex? Not that I had the faintest idea of what she was talking about. But in the way she phrased it also made me complicit in the act because I said yes.
Right.
So that really was how I was groomed and what took place in the beginning.
So you were complicit, but what age were you? I mean...
Well... It made me feel complicit. I definitely could not give consent to something like that. I was 4 or 5 years old. I was attending early school. I guess that would be the Montessori school system, where you start school a little bit earlier. So yeah, I would be about 4 or 5 years old. No, I definitely couldn't give proper consent. Children can never do that. But it's hard to look back, because as a man, when you look back at these things, you see yourself, in my case, as a 6-foot man who was 5 years old and giving consent. And it took a long time. I didn't look at childhood pictures of myself for a very long time. Because I didn't like to see myself as that weak person. So, yeah.
And I think a lot of survivors have shame because of things like that, where they feel that they deserved it, or they were, you know, they allowed it to happen. So I'm really glad that we touched on that.
Definitely. So was there any one incident of abuse that stands out most in your memory?
The incident that stood out the most and really kept me quiet as a child about everything was the first perpetrator continued her acts. And one day we were caught by a male and he pulled me aside. And in my mind, I thought I was going to get in trouble. In the West Indies, this took place in Trinidad, you know, I thought he was going to tell on me. And instead he said, well, if you do it with her, you do acts with her, you can do acts with me. Otherwise, I'm going to tell on you. And that alone, that blackmail, it made me feel that, oh my goodness, I really am in trouble for doing this. I really am a part of this now. And that really shut me up as a child and made me clamp down. Again, both of these people were not strangers. That's something I always like to stress and tell people who are raising their kids now, you know, watch your male children, watch your female children, because they were both people who were part of my family, who were considered family.
And 90% of the time, that is the case. Myself, when I was being raised, my parents were always warning me about stranger danger, and I don't think that they ever really thought that it could potentially be someone who's close to us. So another very important point to bring attention to. Mark, we like to share with our listeners the signs and symptoms of a child who may be experiencing abuse so that they're aware of what to look out for. Can you tell us what symptoms you displayed, like how your personality or behavior may have changed as a result of the abuse?
I think as a child, I definitely displayed some signs, but I don't know who knew what to look for. For me, it was an instant distrust of 90% of my family. I didn't like to stay at anyone's house. My mother, you know, we talk about it now, and she would say, my goodness, this child was always on my leg. We would go to a cousin's house, and my sisters would say, my cousins would stay, everybody would be fine, but when it came time to go, I wanted to leave with my mother. I did not want to spend nights anywhere. So that, I think, was my main way of crying out. I never told my mother anything. I had been lying to her since I was 5 years old when everything started. So it was just my way of being protected, because I knew with her I was safe.
And how did the abuse affect you mentally? What was your perspective on what was happening?
My perspective was that it was definitely something that was wrong. I couldn't put it as something bad, because I wasn't being hurt. I wasn't being hit. I wasn't being tied up or anything like that. So I couldn't really get a real perspective on whether it was extremely wrong or extremely bad, or just something the adults, my mother, shouldn't know about. It affected my opinions on sex. It affected my opinions on my self-worth, because to myself now, that was all I was to other women. To women, I really was just something for sex. I didn't think there was other meaning to having me around, another worth.
And I know you mentioned that because of the blackmail, you felt like you couldn't really tell anyone what was going on, especially adults. I'm just wondering, do you remember mentioning the abuse to any of your peers, maybe in school?
No. I know that as I got older, I think in my early teens, whenever sex would come up, I would just brag about starting early and knowing everything. when I hit about 15 or 16, there was a friend of mine who was a virgin, and it changed. I changed my perspective on things because I told him, value that, you know, take pride in that, because some of us didn't have that luxury of choosing when it was lost. Mm-hmm. And I think that's the closest I ever came to telling anyone that what happened.
Wow.
In my childhood, in a more detailed way.
You know, what you just said is so poignant, because definitely I myself have heard so much of that, young boys or men saying, oh yeah, I started really early, and bragging about it, you know, as if it's some passage of right to be, you know, having sex at 6 or 7 years old, and you don't really know what that is. You can't even give consent to that. So, yeah, I'm glad that you brought that up as well. So, Michael, how did the abuse come to an end?
Well, it actually came to an end not by accident, really. We moved out of Trinidad and we moved to Toronto. And the entire relocation of my family, my immediate family, took me out of the different environments where abuse was taking place. And coming here, Toronto, I didn't view it as safe. I have a lot of Toronto family here that I'm not close to because I didn't trust anyone.
Mm-hmm.
But Toronto was a lot safer for me as a child, as a teen, and as an adult growing up than Trinidad was.
Wow. So when you did come here, then what path did your life take once the abuse ended and once you actually were situated over here in Toronto?
Well, there was a large acting out period, because as much as I was being abused, that was also the norm. There was that mm-hmm. attention from females that I was getting from the age of about 5 years old.
Mm-hmm.
So there was an acting out and feeling that I was alone, that no one cared about me. Also coming here, there was an acting out against education, acting out against anyone who said that they loved me because I didn't trust them. This mm-hmm. new family that wanted to get to know me, I didn't know half of them. So there was a good bit of acting out period in there. And, you know, my parents, I bless them and I love them. And I know they did their absolute best. They were concerned, was it drugs? Was it, you know, they really were searching to find the answers. Mm-hmm. They just didn't know. And I didn't feel comfortable speaking about it.
Mm-hmm.
Wow, it's very challenging in that aspect. You come to a new country, you're with new people, and then mm-hmm. to have to deal with all of that on top of it. Aside from that, what was one of your biggest challenges that you faced during that time?
One of the biggest challenges I faced during that time, the adjustment of coming here, was I definitely missed what was going on, and I had to try to find new ways to fill that gap.
Wow.
And unfortunately, I think maybe at around 14 or 15 years old, I got involved with a young lady who was maybe 19 or 20.
Mm-hmm.
So I filled the gap again with another cycle of abuse.
Mm-hmm.
So that was one of my bigger challenges, was filling that gap, and it took many, many years before I started to find ways to fill it in a healthy way. I have a very addictive personality. I got into any type of game, any type of video game, sports, cards, gambling, anything that would take my attention away from what I was going through.
Mm-hmm. And when you say gap, mm-hmm. what do you mean specifically?
Female attention.
Okay.
Female attention that I believed was genuine at that time, that I believed was sincere in a way of showing love, because that's what I had known from 5.
Yeah.
On the opposite end, I also absolutely despised adult males and males in general, because the grooming was by a female. The male, it was blackmail. So it was a forced.
Mm.
So I didn't trust men. I had problems with all types of men. I still do to this day have a hard time adjusting my point of view on men.
Wow.
So that's one of the areas in terms of that gap.
Thank you. And you, have that issue with men. How about with women? How did the abuse affect your intimate partner relationships with women?
I didn't understand a lot of it for many years. Things would take place and I wouldn't understand my reaction. I think the largest reaction is in the workplace, I often wore shirts. In almost every workplace environment, I wore button-up shirts. And many partners I had would, you know, it's playful for you to undress your partner.
Mm-hmm.
And in elementary school in Trinidad, you wore a button-up shirt. When I was being groomed, she used to button my shirt and unbutton my shirt and dress me. So as a teenager, as an adult, any woman who had tried to unbutton my shirt immediately got pushed away.
Mm-hmm.
And it was an absolute rejection of that intimacy. So that's one example. And I never understood it till I got older, till about 30, 33 years old, when I sat down and really thought about it.
And do you remember what your perspective was when you were rejecting that act?
I thought it was stupid. There's no reason for a woman to be undressing me. I'm a grown man, and it really affected my manhood mm-hmm. at that time.
And how did the abuse affect the way you saw yourself? And I mean, as a grown-up, as a grown man.
As a man, I didn't see myself as anything of value. I saw myself in relation to what I could provide to people. It made me a good employee in many ways. It made me just a reflection of whatever relationship I was in and whatever relationship my family members wanted from me. That would be what I'd reflect at the time. But my own identity was buried. I was buried.
Well, we've come to a break. And when we come back, we'll talk with Michael about his healing journey and the work that he's doing to help other survivors. In the meantime, reach out to us on Twitter at Survival of Abuse. We'd love to hear from you. See you in 3 minutes.
It's your world. Motivate, change, succeed. VoiceAmericaEmpowerment.com.
Abuse is an epidemic that thrives on silence. It's time to reclaim our voices. Abuse Survival Stories is an event series which celebrates men and women who have experienced various forms of abuse while providing them with a platform to share their stories and help shatter the silence on which abuse thrives. Featuring raw survival testimonials, powerful spoken word poetry, and creative expression exercises, Abuse Survival Stories is a positive experience which uplifts both the mind and the soul. If you are interested in bringing an Abuse Survival Stories event to your city, please contact us at radio@abusesurvivalstories.com and let's put an end to suffering in silence.
How do you define work? Is it that mundane Monday through Friday place that seems to be sucking a third of your life out of you? Or have you made it a place of personal fulfillment, achievement, and purpose? If you are looking to make your work life the latter, tune in to Working on Purpose with Elise Cortez. There are all kinds of inspiring work-life stories told by people who have made work something to look forward to every day. Working on Purpose can be heard every Wednesday at 6 p.m. Eastern Time, 3 p.m. Pacific on Voice America Empowerment.
It's your world. Motivate, change, succeed. VoiceAmericaEmpowerment.com.
You are listening to Abuse Survival Stories presents I Reclaim My Voice. To reach our show today, please call in to 1-888-346-9141. Again, that's 1-888-346-9141. You may also send an email to radio@abusesurvivalstories.com. Now, back to our show.
Abuse Survival Stories is a therapy disguised within a bi-monthly symposium. This event itself is a phenomenon known only to the few in comparison to the amount of broken hearts that are beating to the sound of pain and strife. This one-of-a-kind event is a form of catharsis that allows the thinking mind to feel what the soul feels by allowing it to tap into the realms we identify as empathy, sympathy, and compassion. I am more than happy to say that Abuse Survival Stories have changed my life and the life of others by healing the emotional wounds created by trials and tribulations of the past. Because of Reese and those who were courageous enough to share their intimate and personal stories, I have chosen to share the suffering of those who cannot bear this pain alone, for I am a survivor.
Welcome back. That was a beautiful testimonial sent in to us by a frequent attendee to our events, someone who really believes in the Abuse Survival Stories movement and who has supported us from day one. The Abuse Survival Stories events provide a space where survivors can connect with one another and be heard and understood. We're having our next event called Connecting with Courage on Saturday, May 2nd at the Scarborough Civic Center, starting at 12:30 p.m. So if you're in Toronto, make sure to join us. We're here with Michael Marks, survivor of childhood sexual abuse and advocate for male survivors. Michael, we were just talking about the abuse you went through and how it affected your life growing up. Let's discuss your healing journey. What was the biggest obstacle to speaking out about your childhood abuse?
I think the biggest obstacle would be the myths around male abuse, specifically speaking of the vampire myth, which is once you've been abused, you'd become an abuser. Mm-hmm. And someone close to me who I first reached out to told me about that myth, and it floored me. I don't think I can accurately describe the level of trauma that did to me, because I'm a youth worker. That's what I do. I work with kids. I run summer camps. I've done so much work with them. To think that one day I'm just going to turn and become this person who I despise, and that other people would think that of me, it shut me up. It shut me up, and it shut me down for a very long period of time.
And what led you to finally being able to speak out about what happened to you?
It was about May 2010. I had lost my job through my own actions. I had pushed away 90% of my family and friends. I had spent about 2 weeks in a basement eating rice and I think burger meat and not really leaving the house. But when people call, I'd tell them, yeah, I'm on the road, or just making excuses. Mm-hmm. I spent most of those 2 weeks trying to figure out how to commit suicide without anyone knowing and not affecting my family and my mother, mainly. And I couldn't come up with a way to do it. I tried, I thought of it, I couldn't figure out how this could not affect my mother. And so I figured, okay, if I can't end my life, then I have to do something to save it. And so I decided to start dealing with This was the obstacle that was left. This is the only thing I could come up with why I felt worthless. It had to be about this. It had to be about abuse. So, yeah.
And who was the first person you told, and how did they respond?
I believe the first person I told was my older sister. My big sister is downtown's Brown. She came to the house, and we sat there on the carpet in the basement. And I went blah and told her everything. I think I was just spewed out everything. And she cried. She held me and told me a bit about her story. And that was the first person I told. And it was well received, and it wasn't what I expected. And she found online resources for me. That took me a month or two before I could even open those links. You know what it is to not be able to open a website when you're a tech person? So that's how I started my journey, thanks to her help.
Amazing. Wow. Anything you want to say to her?
I know she's listening, and I know it was instinctual for her. She's not a trained therapist or anything, but she gave me exactly what I needed. And then we went on to talk to my other older sister, and she, again, echoed everything that I needed. The main thing she said is that, I don't hate you.
Wow.
And it was hard growing up. It's been hard. It was hard as an adult, thinking that person who you spent at that time 30 years of your life hates you. Because I wasn't there for her, even though I was the younger one and I was the child. And that's how everything started.
Wow. So what does it feel like? Because I imagine for some reason, I imagine you sitting there talking to your sister and kind of just peeling off all these layers, like these heavy layers of shame and secrecy. Yeah. And how were you feeling?
Terrified. absolutely terrified, because one key aspect that was missing, and I got it later on in a couple of months after, even while speaking to my sisters, speaking to anyone who wanted to support me and hearing their stories, none of them were males that were abused that could still silence that vampire myth that existed in the back of my head. And it was about 2 months later when I first walked into the therapy group where there were about 10 other men who had been abused. And one of them said, yeah, you know, I have a wife and I have kids. And I'm married and I'm trying to deal with this now, but I've been dealing with it for years. And I broke down in tears because I didn't think it was possible to be married and have kids. That was that aspect. So while speaking with my sisters, I was still terrified. So, yeah.
Oh, that's amazing. I myself have never heard of that. I have heard of females also having the same thing, but I didn't know there was even a name to it. So I'm so glad that you brought that up, because that sounds huge.
Yeah.
So what setbacks have you encountered since starting your journey?
There's a lady who runs one of our groups, Lynn Magdanell. She's an amazing therapist. She often repeats, the habits that allowed us to survive are crippling us as adults. And for me, the habit that crippled me was that I can lie. I have been lying to the person I love the most, my mother, since I was 4 or 5 years old. So when people would catch me in a lie and say, oh, how could you lie to me? I didn't feel guilt. Why do I feel guilty about lying to you when the person who deserves the truth the most never got it from me? You know, so getting past that instinct to lie and protect myself, even about the littlest things, that has been a huge obstacle in my journey, and I still fight with it.
Incredible. Can you repeat that line again about survival mechanisms?
She repeats it. She says, the mechanisms that allowed us to survive as a child will cripple us and continue to cripple us as adults.
Huge. Yeah, because it's so often that we continue behaviors and thought processes that are no longer relevant to the lives that we're currently living.
Exactly.
And that's just such an important line. So thank you for sharing, and many thanks to her as well for that. Michael, what would you say is one of the major barriers keeping men who have experienced sexual abuse from speaking out and seeking the help, support, and justice that they deserve?
I've already touched on the myths and the beliefs that surround males who have been abused. Mm-hmm. I'll go on to talk about now the support. There was in the group I was with, there was a gentleman who said he wanted to join the board of an abuse center located outside the city. And they told him no, because it was only for women. The board should only be made of women. There was a gentleman who went to the police to file a report, and they said, what do you mean you were raped? That doesn't even make sense. The fact that men speak out, try to help each other, and are turned away and denied is something that is a barrier. It's a huge barrier to everything that we need to accomplish and to get better and to make ourselves whole again. And I think the last aspect that is a barrier to what we as men need, I'm going to now speak culturally, is the West Indian culture. Mm-hmm. This don't talk about it. This aspect of our culture that hides these things, because out of the first 10 people I spoke to about the abuse I suffered as a child, out of the first 10, 8 of them were abused and hadn't told anyone. That's a ridiculous number. Mm-hmm. So yeah, that's some of the barriers that are still blocking people from seeking help. And even after all the support that I received, I still hadn't met a male of color who was willing and who had spoken out and sought help. It was actually Tyler Perry on Oprah, who was the first black male who I saw speaking out in a positive way about his experiences and acknowledging that he was abused as a black man.
Wow. So, you know, you spoke about being of Caribbean descent and the closure, you know, and I'm of Caribbean descent as well, and speaking with others as well, I found the same thing. We seem to be very reluctant to speak about sexual abuse and race within our community. So I'm just wondering, based on your experience, if you found anything, what have you uncovered as to why this seems to be?
The one thing I could say is that the West Indian culture, people of minority descent, are very resilient. And somehow the trials, the struggles we've had, everything to do with our color, has somehow also carried over into us being strong and silent when it comes to issues of abuse. You know, yes, we were strong. We've suffered through many things as a culture. But that shouldn't also mean we should suffer silently when it comes to domestic abuse, sexual abuse, or any of those injustices that we are putting on ourselves.
Definitely.
That's the closest I can come to finding an answer as to why men and women in our culture just suck it up and, you know, I already dealt with that. Don't worry about it. That was the past. Mm-hmm. You know, that sort of attitude around these things.
Yeah, I've definitely heard that, and I think you touched upon something really real there, the strength, the needing to be strong, and we're a community of strength, and we can't show any weakness, and it's not weak at all. It's very strong to speak out. So, Michael, this next question I want to ask you is, it's something that I've seen for myself, and a lot of the men that I've actually spoken to who were sexually abused by other men have said that for several years they were, and some still are, confused about their sexuality because of the way their body reacted during the abuse. Mm-hmm. I'm just wondering if this is an issue that you frequently come across in your dealings with men who've been sexually abused, and what type of advice you do or what type of advice you can offer them in terms of trying to find themselves in that aspect.
Okay. There are three very separate answers to that. I'm going to break it into three ways.
Sure.
There are men who are abused by men who are confused because of the reactions of their body.
Mm-hmm.
And Tyler Perry spoke about that. Our bodies are our bodies. They're going to react. Mm-hmm. And that has nothing to do with being homosexual. Pedophilia is not homosexuality.
Mm-hmm.
So that adult who was abusing you as a child, that's not homosexual love.
Definitely.
So that is something that a lot of men, if they're having any concerns, if they're thinking that, that's something you have to be very clear about. You're not a homosexual because you were abused by an adult male.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
The other aspect, again, different answers, is anything you do as you grow up, whether you're with men or women, and you're questioning and you're worried about how your body reacts, understand that you are trying to find yourself. You lost a portion of your childhood. Forgive yourself and try to work through it. Don't use the abuse as the starting point of understanding your sexuality. Use your consenting age, the age of consent, when you felt that you made an empowered choice in your relationship with a man or a woman, as a way to find an answer to whether you're gay or homosexual or straight. And I think the last piece is, I think whether it's men or men, a man with a man or a woman who abused a woman or anything like that, is, yeah, it was abuse. It's not a love. It's not a relationship. A lot of us could be, were confused because we were groomed. and we felt they loved us, but that's not how we start to understand our sexuality. Don't use that as a framework. Someone who wants to have sex with you does not necessarily love you. And I was definitely confused. I believe 90% of my relationships started in bed. I had relationships that started before the first date because she came over and we slept together. Mm-hmm. That's not how you start a relationship. Mm-hmm. So, yeah.
Well, that is huge, and I really love that answer, because as I said, there are still some men who are suffering, and we do have to remember, scientifically, our bodies are meant to do things mm-hmm. Sometimes that we don't necessarily, our minds are not willing to do. You know, that's just the way the bodies are made. Thank you so much for that answer. Truly appreciate it.
Yeah, absolutely. We're going to head into a break now, and when we come back, we'll talk more with Michael about his journey. We'll see you in 3 minutes.
Follow us on Twitter for more great ideas at Voice America Empowerment.
When is the last time you saw sparkles of life in your day? Each day holds a treasure, the extra in the ordinary. It is too easy to miss them because they're familiar and we take them for granted. If you want to add sparkle to your day, listen to Mighty Gems, Spotlighting Everyday Jewels with Dee Lee. She offers a new way to view the world and to discover your own mighty gems in daily life. Listen Fridays at 11 a.m. Pacific Time, 2 p.m. Eastern Time on the Voice America Empowerment Channel.
If you're a free thinker, a seeker of truth, and a lover of stimulating literature, then you will find all that you need in just one powerful book, The God Behind the God, the second book by critically acclaimed author Arian Herbert. Many are saying that this new book is absolutely outstanding, thought-provoking, even mind-blowing. Get your copy of The God Behind the God now on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, and Chapters Indigo, or visit thegodbehindthegod.com. Seek within until you discover
the God behind the God.
We're on Facebook, along with some of the greatest minds of the world, and that includes you. Visit us on Facebook at Voice America Empowerment.
You are listening to Abuse Survival Stories presents I Reclaim My Voice. To reach our show today, please call in to 1-888-346-9141. Again, that's 1-888-346-9141. You may also send an email to radio@abusesurvivalstories.com. Now, back to our show.
Welcome back. Michael, we were just talking about the issues that male survivors of abuse, sexual abuse face. So what can we as mothers, sisters, wives, girlfriends do to help the men in our lives who have come forth and opened up about being sexually abused? And do you think that we need to do or say things differently than we would to women who have been through the same thing?
Based on my experience and what I've heard from other men, in terms of helping men come forward and open up, it is definitely, it will be at their own pace. I think one thing that will help is encouraging open dialogue, speaking of your childhood without judgment, living lives and relationships without judgment. And once those men open up, encourage them to seek support. We were abused in isolation. You can only heal with a community. There are things that a man and a woman who has been abused will say that you won't understand, but when you get them in a group or speaking with others who have been abused, sometimes they won't even have to open their mouths because that person will already say what they've gone through.
Yes.
That support is, I can't even begin to explain how important it is to get support. If you can't get that support, then work with what you have. But if you can get support of people who have been through it, it will help you recover on your journey, and it will help your relationship with your mothers, wives, sisters, husbands. As men, that will help you more than anything else.
Yes, that is so huge, and that's why we do this. That's why we do the Abuse Survival Stories events. Once you hear that someone else has been through it, you're no longer alone in that cave. You have others who understand you, and that, you know, that's such an amazing place to be in. So, Michael, what would you say was the first step on your healing journey?
Deciding to live. I can laugh about it now, but in that basement, I don't know how to, very few people know how low that period was. There were about 3 mice down there. I slept on the couch because I didn't want to get out and walk on the carpet. I was afraid. I was sitting there. I didn't cook. I really was just alone. And it's not that I was pushed into isolation. I sabotaged myself into that situation by lying, by stealing, by doing whatever to get into that situation. And that way I would feel comfortable just ending it because I was nothing of value. That part, that's deciding to live was a huge first step.
That is a huge first step.
Yeah.
And we're so grateful that you did decide. And I'm sure many of the people whose lives that you've impacted are grateful for that as well.
Right.
What would you say has been the most rewarding part of your journey thus far, even with all its difficulties?
The most rewarding part of my journey, hands down, there are 2 relationships that have been transformed. My mother and I talk honestly, openly. I don't have anything hidden from her. I had never had that relationship with my mother, not without something being in the background. At one point during my journey, I would leave the house at around 8:30 to get to work for 9. I would be walking. And I'd call her, and when I got into work, I'd put her on Skype on the computer. She'd spend the day at work with me, and then I'd be walking home and call her again, and we'd talk. And every day, we were just talking. It was beautiful. I did not know that relationship was possible with a member of your family, because I had pushed them all so far away.
Mm-hmm. So, what role does your mother play for you now in your life?
She is, I don't even know if I can find the words. Mm-hmm. When I look at where I am in my life, even the good in my life, it goes back to my mother. It goes back to my sisters. You know, it goes back to everything they guided me on, everything from when I had the lovely misguided notion that only women cook, and they corrected me from that, you know, to all of my relationships. The women in my life raised me and guided me. So my mother is everything. She is it for me.
That's absolutely beautiful. Are there any other ways in which you have been able to make positives out of the negatives you've experienced?
Yes. All of the negatives, I think one of the things on this journey has helped me do, there are steps that some therapists recommend. Getting in touch with your childhood. Trying to remember what you were like before abuse started. And I can connect with that portion because it was so early for me. What I've been able to do is accept myself. I sat down and looked at almost every single part of my personality, and I had to sit down and figure out, is it genuine, or is it something I created to protect myself and to push others away?
Wow.
And when I say every aspect, I had to look at my clothing. Why do I not shave at times? Why do I not cut my hair? I don't clean my room because I don't think I'm deserving of somewhere clean to live. Do I not apply for jobs because I think if I'm paid too much, they're going to want something in return? My sense of humor. I had to try to figure out, why am I so sarcastic? Is this just a protection thing, or is that actually genuinely the type of person I am? turns out I'm a sarcastic prick at times. But I still had to sit down and examine it. But that getting to know myself really is the most rewarding and most, that's the good that I've taken from this, is that I know myself. That's my positive.
And just because I know there's other people who are struggling with that journey of looking at themselves, I want to ask you, was it always easy to do that, to face different sides of yourself?
No, there are books that I used along the lines, A Time to Heal. There's Courage to Survive. There's a ton of different books. There are chapters I skipped and I still can't get to. I can't say I've come to terms with religion and spirituality fully. I can't say I understand forgiveness at all. Speaking bluntly, there are times where I wish one of the perpetrators is dead. And I always say I would go and piss on the grave. I just can't forgive. I hope they're burning. You know, it's one of those things that I deal with and struggle with. This issue of forgiveness. So it's not something you're ever going to look at once. You're going to look at it over and over because you were abused during your formative years.
Yeah.
So you really have to try to figure out where you are, and you're going to make mistakes along the way. Forgive yourself and just start again.
You know, Michael, I really love your honesty, because sometimes it might be a little easy to kind of fantasize or, about the forgiveness and the healing, and it seems like it's just one great journey, but no, it's a lot of ups and downs and, you know, one step forward and five steps back, you know, so it's so encouraging to hear you speak about, you know, the fact that you still have some things that you're still going through, because even though you're helping others, you're still trying to help yourself. And I think that's really, really huge. So I wanted to ask, you just talked about, you know, some things that you would tell people, but what other message do you have for male survivors who can relate to what you shared today, particularly those who are still living with the secret of what happened to them?
For other male survivors, and that's the reason why I did this interview today. I've spoken before, but I've never let it be recorded. I've never allowed pictures to be taken, anything.
Wow.
For other male survivors, my message is, you're not alone. You're definitely not alone. There are support systems out there for you. Even if this is your second time trying to share what took place, even if this is your third, your 10th time digging yourself out of the hole, keep trying, because you are worth it, you are valuable, and you're not alone.
Yes, definitely. So why do you choose to continue to share your story with others?
I continue to share my story because I keep on running into the barriers. I run into the barriers that are keeping men silent, and I see it. And unfortunately, my mother raised me to fight against these things. I grew up with race. There was racism in my school. I know there are schools now where, you know, no one is called nigger, no one is called names, but I grew up with that stuff, so I was always fighting. So when I see these barriers around sexual abuse and keeping men silent and keeping us imprisoned, I have to speak up. I keep speaking up, and that's why I continue to share my story, because I hope to continue to shine and continue to let others shine as well. That's a little tribute to my sister there.
Wow.
And also, if Tyler Perry could do it live on TV in front of millions of people, hey, I have to be able to do it too.
Before we wrap up, we're about to close the show. We just wanted to ask you the question we ask all of our other guests. Michael, what would you say was the moment that you reclaimed your voice?
That answer changes so many times, but I know today it would be today, because my voice is being recorded. I will share it with others, and it will help someone. So it is today I reclaim my voice.
Amazing.
Wow. Well, thank you for doing that here. We really appreciate you joining us on the show today, and we're so grateful for everything that you shared with us, and we wish you so much success on your journey as you continue to positively impact the lives of others, of other survivors.
Thank you. Thank you guys for having me. This was life-changing. This was a big moment for me today.
Well, to our listeners, if you'd like to reach out to Michael, you can do so by email at michaelim80@outlook.com. That's michaelim80@outlook.com, or on Facebook at facebook.com/michaelmarks80. We thank you all so much for tuning in today. And be sure to visit us on our website at abusesurvivalstories.com for more information on the work that we're doing. And also make sure to connect with us on Twitter under the name Survival of Abuse. You can find the links to our past shows on our host page at voiceamerica.com, as well as on iTunes, Stitcher, and TuneIn. You can also email us at radio@abusesurvivalstories.com. We'd love to hear what you thought about the show or what you'd like to hear on future shows. And if you've enjoyed what you've been hearing, please spread the word.
You've been listening to Abuse Survival Stories Presents I Reclaim My Voice. I'm your host, Reese Zigazaga.
And I'm your co-host, Denise. Next week, we're going to be speaking with Grace, who has survived domestic abuse, several rapes, and human trafficking. Make sure to tune in. Right now, we're going to close off today with Dwayne Hall's performance of his poem, Unleash, which is a testimonial to the power of reclaiming one's voice. You can reach out to Dwayne on spokenher.ca. That's spokenher.ca. Please enjoy the poem, and we'll see you again next week.
I turn to an empty page, and I weep. I weep for what has not been said. I mourn for a caged voice, laying dead, longing for freedom. But somewhere between cradles and caskets, we've been robbed of our will to speak. See, somewhere between my heart and my voice box, somewhere between my heart and my voice box, see, somewhere between my heart and my voice box, I have built a dam to hold back every uncontrollable, overwhelming rave of release threatening to overthrow my perfect little world of perception. See, I shut down. And it's as deceptive as a yawn. It's as simple as a swallow. See, it's as subtle as a scratch out. And it has taken me 31 years for me to write this poem. And I long to race through fields of uninhibited nature, climb to the very top of the highest cliff and bellow so loud as to shake the very stars from the heavens and cast them across the sky in a blaze of glory and wonder of what supernatural phenomenon has just occurred. See, this voice has birthed revolutions. This voice has poured out prophecies and anointed Christ. See, this voice is the frequency of creation. This voice has soothed the suffering of the oppressed, mounted lovefare against warfare, and banished brokenness with a breath. See, this voice is powerful. This voice has sung the song of the wind of the world and wept at its rushing repose. See, this voice is ancient. This voice has leapt with the gazelle and roared with the lioness in hunt. This voice has brought civilizations to their knees and rebuilt kingdoms. This voice has moved celestial bodies in sacred silence to vibrant dance. See, this voice is spirit. This voice is my highest, truest self, and it has been speaking way before this body was made manifest. And see, there's a storm coming, erupting from the depths of my belly, summoning the strength of stallions and stampede, and when it explodes, it will be like the flight of 1,000 angels in winged ecstasy, and it will be like a blaring symphony of color and light and vibration, and it will be like the unexpected hero coming to reclaim Zion, because my voice, see, our voice is home.
Thank you again for tuning in to the program this week.
Abuse Survival Stories presents I Reclaim My Voice with co-hosts Reese Zigazaga and Denise Watkus can be heard live every Thursday at 5 p.m. Pacific Time, 8 p.m. Eastern Time on the Voice America Empowerment Channel. Please join us again next week.